All right, everybody, welcome back to the Move Podcast, talking about the Tour of Italy, the Giro. We're wrapping up week two, and I've been absent a little bit, but you guys have been covering it. I know, and we got Mr. Hincapie in the house, who just got back. George, when did you just got back from Australia?
Yeah, 1 a.m. last night.
Oh my God, we just missed each other. Isn't that weird?
I know.
Over there in Madrid, again, the pack drop. It's just, Johan, you are, man, this is amazing. Johan Bernil.
And look, I've always known that I was a saint. Look at this. I have just.
There are a lot of people in cycling that would beg to differ, but which means if you don't know what that means, they would disagree with that, Johan. It's a good look. And over there in Austin, I saw a special JB Hager with a special award or special recognition yesterday from the city of Austin. I thought that was pretty cool.
That was pretty random. That nine was, years after being on the radio.
You and Sandy look like an old married couple there.
We kind of are. Yeah, we spent a lot of years together.
I was like, yes, it's probably better they separate them after 30 years together. But
yeah, that was fun. But hey, I got to mention, I didn't know if you were going to show up today, Lance. You've been kind of off doing crazy things.
Oh man.
I didn't know when you were back, when you'd be back with this.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, and it's not a secret anymore. I posted it up on Insta and they're starting to run ads. Fox is already starting to run ads for it. I was watching the show the other night and it came up. It's funny thing. I was watching a show with the kids and the commercial came on for this new reality show called Stars on Mars. So it was, they basically took 12 of us, everybody from myself, Marshawn Lynch, Ronda Rousey, Natasha Leggero, Adam Rippon, et cetera, and they put us in basically a Mars simulation in the outback of Australia. Now, I was in this, it's filmed in this place called Coober Pedy. I don't recommend that anybody go to Coober Pedy. And I was in the habitat for 2 weeks. So you all know, especially this crew right here, And the listener knows, because I say it all the time. I don't like people. All right. And I'm not trying to sound like some sort of grump, but I just don't. You know, I love who I love. And I'm good with that. And I'm going to stick with that. So George is just can't wait to hear it.
I had a lot to say about that, but I'm going to let you finish.
So imagine throwing me in a habitat, and I mean, fairly small. Very confined, shared sleeping spaces, shared bathrooms, shared kitchens, everything shared, with 12 strangers. And, it was interesting. It was very interesting. I think I'll look back on it and have some fond memories. It's hard. And you realize, I mean, it is a reality show. So that whole dynamic of a reality show plays out. There were 60 cameras constantly mic'd up. So they are capturing everything. And then we would go out and do missions. I won't tell everybody what happened on the show. You'll have to watch to find out. The first episode, by the way, on Fox is June 5th. But it was a grind. I was happy to get home and see the family. And,
well, a lot of people asked me about it. Of course I didn't know much, you know, at all, but I was like, you know, he'll be good at playing the game of reality TV, but what a lot of people probably don't know about you, Lance, is that you're very meticulous with your space around you.
Yeah.
Very, very tidy and organized.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say OCD. You're not that far.
But I would.
Would you? Okay. And then so living with other people's stuff, I can't picture you doing that.
Yeah. That's all on the show. The only place that wasn't, and I know we're getting off subject here, but we'll wrap up. But the only place that was off limits were the bathrooms for obvious reasons, but everything else. And I will say they had a gym in there, which was cool. And I mean, I think it'll look amazing on TV. But the reality is, and before I went, I started reading all these articles. At some point in time, whether it's us, the Americans or whoever is going, or the Chinese or whoever is going to send people to Mars. Right. And it's going to require 7 months in a spaceship to get there. And then a year, there. And then, you know, I guess however long to get back in a much smaller space. And so just being there 2 weeks, and this was you know, this was a glorified version of a habitat, but boy, it's hard. I'm telling you, it's very, very hard. And I'm glad to be home. Yeah. Anyways, June 5th on Fox primetime. Check it out. I was trying to, I will say I did fart a couple of times, which was a big hit on the show.
should we have a wrap up show on the actual show on June 6th? See what your teammates think about it.
Well, it's there's 12 episodes, right? So we will have to be sort of playing along with this during our big show, during the move.
We can do our own recaps.
Yeah. I mean, I fear that every Monday, they're on Monday nights. I fear that of course, that's a rest day. I fear that every Monday we're going to have to do, you know, we're going to be talking about the tour, but I'm also going to have to be talking about what happened that week on Stars on Mars. And it's, I will say it was not, we didn't all sit around and sing Kumbaya. I'll just leave it at that. y'all know me. Let's talk about the Giro. Before we do, today's show brought to you by Element. We talk about it all the time. And finally, I'm looking outside. The sun is out. The warm tips are arriving here in Aspen. It is time to go outside, kids. Be an outdoor kitty and get your sweat on. I sweat my ass off. We all know that. I tell you all the time. Element is our go-to hydration source and resource. 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium. No sugar, no gluten, no artificial ingredients, no BS. It is the real deal. And best of all, if you don't like it, just give it to a friend. An Elementee will refund you. So they got a free gift with the purchase. All you got to do is head on over to drinkelementee.com/themove. And those are the letters, drinkelementee.com/themove. You get a free sample pack. So you can try out all the flavors, citrus, raspberry, orange, and unflavored. Dial in the one you like. Get your free gift over there. That's drinkelementee.com/themove. Today also brought to you by Ventum. I got a little update here. George, I'm glad you noticed this morning on my Strava or whatever, or maybe on Instagram, I went out for a road ride on my new NS1. Of course, we broke ground on those babies in Tuscany when we were there right before I went to Mars. The thing's a rocket ship. We talk about it all the time. This brand is crushing it. They've got amazing customer support. Dia and his whole crew, they've just built a couple of badass bikes, the NS1, the GS1, of course, the gravel bike. But I got a little bone to pick. All right. I've been noticing on the gram, and I'm riding a stock one right now. But George, am I seeing that you have a custom NS1? Did I see that right?
Was that
photoshopped?
It was not a photo shoot. It's a custom matte black with Columbia flags S1. It also says NS1, but it says GH1 on there as well.
Really?
Super cool design. And we will be providing that to our guests that come to the Mallorca camp in September. They'll be able to get custom NS1s fitted on the bikes and be able to ride them in Mallorca with us and take them home as their own.
Right. So that is a little update. As you all know, we did the Mallorca, what's called a fantasy camp, last September. We're going to do it again this September. The dates are September 25th to 30th. It's myself, George, Johan, Big Jan, Ulrich, Mari Holden, and the entire We Do Travel team. Check this out. We're staying at, and we stayed there a couple of years ago, an amazing property in Dea called La Residencia. You guys look it up. I mean, this thing is, I remember when I rolled up there, I was like, and I'm a snob. I see it. I rolled up. I said, holy shit. I may not leave. Like this is, I mean, it was y'all know, man. I mean, the room, the grounds, the property, the food, the wine, it was just amazing. Anyways, 4 days of professionally guided rides, daily post ride massages, custom We Do cycling kit, all the food and beverages. We got the mechanics, we got laundry, we got all the stuff you're going to need. Follow car. Johan will be there as the director sportif. And as George said, you get your very own custom. I guess I have to go. I see what's happening here. Okay. I have to go to get my custom Ventum NS1. That's the deal.
Correct. You got to go.
This is something. For right now, though, special offer for our listeners, head on over to ventumracing.com/themove. That gets you 10% off. Again, that's ventumracing.com/themove. All right. The tour of Italy. Boy, we were chatting in our pre-show with the members. our members meeting, as we call it. And I told the guys, this, to me, it feels like the really the first 2 weeks is all about the three C's, right? You got COVID that reared its head again. You've got the crashes taking out, namely Theo Gegenhardt. And then you have the cold. I mean, these conditions, but I don't think anybody ever likes racing. You just watch and you just have to kind of have one hand over one eye and just like, this is so brutal. I mean, and by the way, this is, and if for y'all that follow the sports, I mean, the weather has been so bad in Italy that they had to cancel the Formula One race in Italy. That shows you how bad the rain has been. The flooding has been, I mean, F1 just straight up said, we can't send first responders to an F1 race because we need all hands on deck. We need everybody here to deal with this disaster, natural disaster. And meanwhile, these guys, of course, not riding through, you know, flooded streets, but the weather's just been atrocious.
Yeah, these guys have looked been in a hurt locker the last week. Every day we turn it on, it's pouring rain. I've seen some guys, Johan, correct me if I'm wrong, having 2-3 rain jackets on. They'll take one rain jacket on. They have another two underneath it. I mean, that is as extreme as it gets. And like you said, Lance, they canceled the Formula One, which shows you the extremity of the weather. And these guys are still out there riding 5-6 hours a day on the bike.
Yeah, lots of stress. You know, when it's raining like this all day, there's still a bike race going on. The top guys and their teams have to stay in front. So it's super nervous, super cold, very uncomfortable with all those clothing on, and also a lot more guys get sick, not just because of the cold, but because of all the rain and everything that comes up and everything you take in. We've seen so many illness, not just COVID, also a lot of stomach problems and guys who just got sick. So it's been really, really hard in the first 2 weeks on the guys.
Just to give you a sense of perspective here, and we haven't even gotten, we're of course going to talk about this final week that everybody is talking about, just how hard it is. There's only 132 riders left. I mean, that's very, very rare in this day and age in cycling. And that's before the last week. I mean, that number we could see something in the one teens.
As I pointed out to Johan, on the last show, I've never seen in a race so many riders just trying to get feeling in their hands. You think about the cold and crashes, when you can't feel the levers, you probably can't feel the brakes. It's just a recipe for disaster.
It's a guessing game, and it's kind of a time release, right? And I have really bad hands, really bad circulation in my hands and feet. So it's one of these things where you kind of have to just look ahead and you're like, I think I'm going to have to break in about 2 seconds. So let me go ahead and have my brain tell my hands to start. Your hands are just blocks, and you can't, this isn't like skiing where you're wearing these big gloves or even heated gloves. You still have to have a fairly thin glove, and you can put on 3 or 4 raincoats, of course, and put on shoe covers. But at the end of the day, you still have to be able to use your hands. So the gloves are thin, and it's absolute torture.
Not mention just braking, but also shifting gears. Sometimes your hands are that cold.
Right.
You got to find unique ways to actually change into a gear that you want to change into because your fingers aren't working the way they should be.
And also, you know, with all those clothes on being cold, you can't eat normally. Like you would normally, you know, feed yourself during a stage. So they arrive, they're more empty, and it's day after day after day. And I think that explains a lot. I mean, I've seen some comments of cycling commenters and journalists that say, you know, this is boring. There's no action going on. Listen, I mean, these guys are warriors. You know, I completely understand why we don't see this action that everybody expects. And plus, you know, this Giro is designed as usual, that the last week is always the hardest week. So I understand that everybody wants to save themselves. There's different things going on. You know, there's guys riding for GC with their teams. There are also guys in the race that their goal is to finish the Giro. You know, there's riders, young riders in there. They do their first Grand Tour. They want to finish. So they're not going to go in breakaways knowing that, A, they can't win the stage. They're going to get dropped and they're still too inexperienced. So I think all these things have to be taken into account. And you know, the criticism of, you know, this is a boring Giro. For the moment, we haven't seen a lot of movement in the GC, but I have seen a lot of interesting stages for the stage wins.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, just when those breakaways are the other day, for instance, I forget. There was the two guys, the Israeli Cycling Academy and the Bike Exchange. They were, I think they had 40 seconds with 1500 meters to go or 2K to go, and they still got caught. And it's not like they completely slowed down, but the tactics came into play. They started maybe watching each other a little bit much. They got caught right at the line. The breakaways, just the other day when Dines won, they also got caught right before the line. It's very rare in cycling to see the riders get caught so close to the line and the people from behind winning like that. It's actually very exciting to watch.
And we've yet to mention, you know, the withdrawal of Remco Evenepoel, which I think, and obviously, you know, he tested positive for COVID. It's crazy to me that now, I guess the protocol is, you know, you can still race if you have COVID. Like if you want to press on, go ahead. I'm like, wait, what just happened? Like okay, whatever. But nonetheless, he pulled out. I think that just kind of, everybody just tweaked out a little bit. Like, I mean, he was such a clear favorite. He had the team. He looked great, you know, obviously amazing opening time trial. And people looked around and were like, oh shit, I guess this thing's wide open now. And that's what we've seen, but they're still trying to, you know, recalibrate from that, but also save up for this last week that everybody says is just totally hellacious. I personally looked at it and thought, meh. Johan read off the stats on just how much climbing there is per day. Of course, the final time trial on the day before the finish is diabolical, but we'll see. I mean, it's like anything, any bike race, it's up to the actors and the play to animate it.
Okay. Well, Remco pulls out the day after, four of his teammates pull out. So that's basically one team gone plus one of the big favorite. Then a few days later, we have this unfortunate crash. Theo Gegenhardt, who, in my opinion, was in the shape of his life. You know, he was amazingly strong. He has to abandon with a broken pelvis. You know, in the meantime, he has been having surgery and apparently everything's going well. But, you know, that obviously changes the whole dynamics. You know, if you look at Ineos, they have Geraint Thomas and Theo. That would have been a totally different game if both of them are still up there. You know, they would have been able to play more tactically. Now they have to focus on Geraint Thomas, and I think, you know, it's a great leader. He has a big chance of winning, but it changes the whole strategy of Ineos. And I think,
yeah, not only that, Johan, but they were Theo and Geraint Thomas were really the only ones that were able to respond to one sort of selected day when Roglic dropped Remco by a little bit. They were the only two that were able to go with him. So you're right. That combination could have caused a lot of damage in this final week. And it's unfortunate to see Theo go out like that. I know it was a major goal of his. He'd been riding super well leading up to the Giro and put the whole year on that. So it's a shame to see him just slide out in a corner and be taken out for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Imagine, for example, if you still have Theo in the race together with Geraint Thomas, they obviously stay up there as being the leaders. But Ineos could have played with a guy like Tijmen Arendsman, who is still top 10. I think he's 7th or 8th. I don't know. But, you know, they would be able to play with him strategically, and he would be able to be in those big groups. It would have been totally different, you know? So now Tijmen Arendsman is, even when he's in top 10, but he has to do the duty of pulling on the last climb and has absolutely no movement to you know, to go in breakaways.
Well, let's jump into stage 13 before we break down what happened, what was going on, especially what was Thibaut Pinot saying. It was a shortened stage, which is interesting because as one of the things I've learned from you guys is some of these riders, they mark a stage, you know, once it's announced, and they set their sights on a stage win there. And all of a sudden you get blindsided by a stage reduced to what, 75K or something like that?
That's right.
Yeah. What's that like for a rider when that you get thrown that curveball?
And especially, you know, it's been announced in the morning, you know, like in the morning they decide, okay, we're not going to go over this Gran San Bernardo. I think it was supposed to be the highest point of the Giro, 2,400 meters. At first they said we're going to go until 1,800 meters, then finally they cut it out. Not just that, but I think the whole logistics of the team, you know, you wake up in the morning, normally you have breakfast 2.5-3 hours before the start, I guess, If that's still the same rule, because I don't know if that's still working, but you know, now they have to be basically 2.5 to 3 hours in a bus, go over that pass, then go down, and then basically have a start at 80K before the finish, and it starts straight up with the hardest climb of the day, super hard climb. It was Verbier, going up Verbier, and then 5 kilometers higher than Verbier. So that changes everything. That day was, I think it was a super hard day. Really, really exciting for the stage win, but nothing happened for GC because on the last climb, Crans-Montana, which is, by the way, you won a time trial.
Yeah, I was going to, when I saw that, I thought, you know, I think I've raced up here. You know, y'all know, I mean, I rarely, you know, outside of Ventoux and Alpe d'Huez, I don't remember these places, but I remember Crans-Montana because it's sort of this swanky place. You got the time trial, you're going by, look over, like, geez, that's a nice golf course. You don't see those in Europe. And then I get to the hotel, I'm like, God dang, this is, I can get used to this. But yeah, there was Tour of Switzerland. There was a individual time trial up that.
Yeah.
So I did remember that, but I also remember it's just not,
it's not very, very hard.
It's not very steep. And in this day and age in cycling, so many guys are so good. It has to be really steep. I mean, look, all of us, if we went and rode it, we'd be like, all right, that's steep enough. We're good. For these guys, it's not. I mean, we saw it in the tour last summer when they throw in some of these 12, 13%ers. That will separate the field. Yeah. Crans-Montana's not going to do that. And then you throw
in. Apparently, it was a headwind as well. So
also headwind.
Yeah, that's a huge problem.
But going back to the weather, I don't think there was one rider in the peloton that was saying, darn it, we're not doing this first climb and descent. I think all of the riders were extremely happy about that. Perhaps the staff adds a whole nother layer of complexity, moving the cars around, keeping the bus at the start as long as possible. I think they actually started, got back in the cars, and then drove the rest of it.
They
did the start and rode a couple of kilometers, pouring rain, three or four jackets on.
Yeah,
was that just to honor the start place? Yeah,
that is not to honor the start place. Incorrect. That is so that the Tour of Italy's organizing committee can get that paper.
Well, from that town or village
or city or whatever that paid to have the Tour of Italy there. But that's come on. That is silly.
I'm correct. The Giro d'Italia wanted to honor the start place, not the riders, but they use the riders to honor their obligation towards the start city. But that sucks. I mean, you have to get wet, then get back in the bus. Very long time ago, I had one experience like this in the tour that Bjarne Riis won, the first tour that Miguel Indurain didn't.
I was there too.
Oh, you were there. So we did that. I mean, we did like 3 hours over the Col de Iseran. Yeah. And the Galibier in the cars, not in the buses, because the buses were not allowed to pass. And then so we were driving, you know, three riders per car, and then basically got down, started in Briançon, and it was a 45-kilometer race. Straight up, a cat one climb, Mont-Genèvre, and then finish on Sestriere. So that's a bit similar. But yeah, I mean, that must be really, really hard. Also mentally to gain, basically, you know, shift your mind, you know, and for sure the riders know already on beforehand that the last climb was headwind because the staff is there. So they knew perfectly well that if they would attack on the first climb, that they would encounter a very hard headwind on the last climb.
Well, let's talk about Pinot and his race, because it's, you know, he was obviously looked like the strongest, you know, one at the stage when if you believe what you read, which I think we do, this is his last year. What a way to, you know, win a stage in the Tour of Italy in your final year after a long career, a great career. I'm watching the stage going and having done Crans Montana, knowing that it's just not, it's hard to get away. There's no moment there where even if you're the strongest, you can actually get away and keep going. But he just kept attacking and attacking. And then these guys were smart. I mean, even the kid, the Movistar kid who won, at one point he was off the back. He just stayed a constant tempo and just kept everybody right there. And then the EF rider doing the same, but I'm watching this going, who is talking? Like, if you're the director in the car going, you know what, let's not do 10 attacks to try to get away. How about we wait. And they know the roads. They know when it goes from 6% to 7%. Let's do maybe 2 or 3. And if it doesn't work, then get ready for the sprint. Mm-hmm. But how many matches did he burn just trying to get away?
And the time gap was not a factor. They had plenty of time.
Right.
And especially those two South Americans. I mean, uphill, those guys are not Panakukken, you know. They're great climbers. You know, Rubio won a stage in one of the early races, I think in Abu Dhabi, actually, in the longest climb. He was ahead of Adam Yates and Evenepoel, coming from the peloton, not from a breakaway. So you know, he's obviously has talent. The other guy has won races already also, and you know, it's not like Pinot. You know, he is obviously a good climber, but he's not going to just ride away from them. So he attacked from the bottom, and there you could see, okay, this is going to go completely wrong, because he attacked, got caught back, then attacked again. I mean, after 3-4 attacks, what do you expect? The guys are not just going to work hard to come back and then start to collaborate with you. You know, right.
And guys tend to show their best effort very early on, so that the other two could monitor that and be like, okay, well that. Let's just assume that was his best attack. And this is what it took me to get back. You can just kind of play the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think looking back, you know, must regret attacking at the bottom of that climb and attacking as many times as he did, because he was so strong and clearly had the legs that had to use a bit more sense on that last climb. He could have really saved it for one or two really hard attacks. And most likely, I think he was the strongest guy in that breakaway. He could have won.
He would have won in the sprint also, George. If he does 2 or 3 attacks and says he, you know, he can't get rid of them, he would have won in the sprint.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden he ran out of legs. I mean, he just didn't have it anymore.
Yeah. Johan, does he do the tour, Thibaut Pinot?
I don't think so. No, the Groupama FDG is focusing on David Godu. They want to be on the podium. He was 5th last year, and I think Demar is also going as a sprinter. So Pinot is not doing the Tour de France.
That was a big miss then.
Which put more at stake with that potential stage win for his
final season. Yeah.
It's not over yet. I still expect him to go in one of those stages, and I think he still will try to win. He has a good chance of winning a stage, because he's obviously in good shape, and he is not... I mean, he is close in GC, but they all know that he's not a real threat to win the Giro. So I think he still has a chance to win a stage.
Well, and I wasn't going to talk about this, but I'm going to. You know, the cat weasel Vaughters was throwing him some shade on Twitter the other day. I don't remember when. I don't know Pino. I don't know what kind of guy he is. But that was some pretty serious shade. Let's hope he's one of these dudes that says, all right, this last week's hard. I'm a climber. It's my final year in the Peloton. Watch this.
I didn't catch that. Was it for the mistakes he made? How emotional he is?
I just said he was a whiny, you know, crybaby that comes across the line crying, doesn't even congratulate the other riders, and didn't name him. But then you're getting, you know, hats off to Pino. Responding like, who are you? which is, and then of course I just, y'all know me, I couldn't help myself.
It was basically congratulating Ben Healy. I mean, what a guy, what a writer, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, he lost to Brandon McNulty, and he went to congratulate him, and so Vaughters made the comparison to Pinot when he had this issue with Cepeda, and said that instead of, you know, going to him, he just was whining in the media. I mean, there's somebody who's a whiner.
Yeah, exactly. These things are always more nuanced, right? You don't know how McNulty and Healy are. They could train together, you know, in Girona, where a lot of these guys live there. They could chat a lot in the Peloton during the races. You know, you could tell that Pino was, he didn't want to have any post-race coffees with these guys. He was pissed during.
We shouldn't be surprised that Pino is emotional like that. This is nothing new.
That's
He's highly, highly emotional.
Yeah. So
wired differently.
And then before we get into the final week, let's just touch on Brandon McNulty. Cause this kid he's a beast. I was so glad to see him win a stage. Mm-hmm. Of course, an American, always nice to see an American win a stage in any grand tour, but I know you have some thoughts on his tactics. I I said in the pre-show, I was like, well, with the tactics that won the stage.
Yeah.
Question mark.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I love the way this kid rides. He's a team guy. He's strong as hell. Clearly must train like a fiend. He's a serious dude.
He looks incredibly, incredibly stylish on a bike. I mean,
yep.
Super, super good position. You know, he's very, very strong. I personally think that, you know, he can get a lot more out of his career than this is his sixth victory as a professional. First Grand Tour stage. You know, let's not forget, Lance, this is the same guy in the Olympic Games who did this move with Carapaz and took a pull, right, and then got dropped, right? So,
That's because he was working for Pogacar. But
I was,
if you remember,
I was critical of his tactics on the second last climb, because we all know that Ben Healy, by the way, I've already said it in another show, but I'm going to say it here again. I have to take back my words about Ben Healy. I said before the Giro, big mistake.
Exactly.
I did say that. And I said on one show, I'm swallowing my words because I was completely wrong. So, not afraid to say that I was completely wrong. This guy is amazing.
You know, that's good to you, Jan. This is a good side. You're coming on
progress. Let me refresh everyone's memory. If you didn't hear those shows, Healy made a name for himself in the spring season with some results. He was everywhere. So they throw him into the Giro, and then Johan's like, "You're taking this fresh kid who's getting some action, and just throwing him at everything," is what it appeared like. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
And he thought that was a mistake, and he's riding.
Yeah, well, it's obviously not a mistake, because he won a stage, he almost won another one, and the Giro's not finished yet. I mean, the guy is on amazing shape. And in the stage yesterday, Healy was in the breakaway, so was McNulty. I mean, I think in McNulty's case, you should focus on Healy and try to follow him. He did that, but he also tried to drop him on the second last climb. And then he got dropped from Healy. Luckily, he could come back. And then he did play it cool. And Healy made a mistake in the final. And McNulty won that stage deservedly. But he made the mistake on the second last climb. And I mean, it shows also how strong he is, because strong riders can correct their mistakes. You know, they can recover from it, and they can still win.
But he might have also, Johan, sort of back in McNulty's attack on that second last climb, is, I'm sure he was thinking, his directors were telling him how good Healy, or they all know how good Healy is in those short, steep climbs. I mean, he was arguably the second best guy in the classics, Amstel Liège. Mm-hmm. And to finish the Bergamo, Lance and I have done that ride from Como. I don't know if you remember. We rode up that same exact finish long time ago. It is short and steep, very similar to the classics. And I'm sure that McNulty just didn't want to get to that climb with him, knowing how good he had ridden up until then during the classics. Ended up winning the race, so it
makes no sense, because there was 30 kilometers from the top of the second last climb to the last climb. Makes no sense.
Well, that's what these guys. That's how Healy won the stage. The other stage, he went away with 40k to go.
Yeah,
but once you get over these climbs, and you know the route, it's all downhill, windy. Arguably, you can go faster than with four or five, six guys, which we're starting to see a lot more of these days.
Yeah.
Anyways, he won the stage. Can we just let the kid, you know,
he did win the stage, and it was,
you
it was
congratulate a, him and be like, yeah, I don't wanna, nobody. No, I mean, listen, it's like golf. Like, you sometimes you skank a shot and it goes in the hole, right? There's no fucking video on the scorecard, right? I mean, the kid won the stage. Congratulations.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
So guys, I got to bounce real quick. I screwed up my schedule. I got to get my kids, but I did want to shout out to and say congratulations to Mark Cavendish, who just announced his retirement and today in the rest day. What an amazing career. What an amazing ride he's already having at the Giro. I think he could have already won a stage had he not had a little bit of bad luck sliding out, but we haven't seen the last of him. I truly think he's going to break that record coming up here in July. And just wanted to say all the best to Mark and his family, and can't wait to hang with him in his post cycling career.
While you're broing down with him, get him to come to the Mallorca camp. He was a big hit.
I will ask him. He was. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you. All right, Jake. I'll see you next one. Bye.
Let's jump into the final week. But before we do, today's show also brought to you by Athletic Greens. We talked earlier in the show about my experience on Mars, or whatever was supposed to be. It felt like, by the way, it felt like Mars, for what it's worth. Like, when you watch this shit, just know, I know it was a show, and I felt like I was on Mars. I mean it. Anyways, I'm talking about Athletic Greens. It's the great thing about Athletic Greens. Not only has it changed my daily routine, and I really think my health and how I've taken control of my health, you can travel with it. I had Athletic Greens every day in this simulated habit, Mars habitat. It really is. It's amazing. 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. Kickstart your day all for less than $3 a day. It's a game changer. I had the travel packs over there at home. I have the big bag that I keep in the fridge. But it really is all about reclaiming your health. Let's make it easy. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/themove. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/themove. And speaking of vitamin D, my vitamin D is always kind of low, but damn, must be woefully low after being inside for 2 weeks. You imagine putting me inside for 2 weeks?
No.
I mean, it's a miracle anybody came out alive. I think Marshawn Lynch was one of them. So he could fend, and Ronda Rousey, they sort of fended for themselves. Today also brought to you by HVMN. We often hear that fasting and exercise are good for the brain. So HVMN has launched the world's first drinkable ketone. They launched it in 2017. Ketone IQ is their latest innovation on ketones with improved effectiveness, taste, and cost. Ketone IQ delivers clean fuel that can cross the blood-brain barrier, supplying your brain and body sustained energy, mental focus, and sharpness, putting you in flow, lasting for hours. Head on over to hvmn.com. Use the promo code THEMOVE at checkout. That gets you 20% off. Again, that's H, these are letters, by the way, hvmn.com. Use the promo code THEMOVE. All right. Last.
Before we get into like the final week and what to expect, something that came up with Johan Spencer and I that I think you'll find interesting, Lunch, because you always talk about cycling being popular in different countries and it's very cyclical. You need those heroes, right? And the American win with McNulty was great. But as we pointed out on a previous show, it seems like after quite a slump, German cycling is on the rise with the Ackermann win. Mm-hmm. And then Nico Denz.
Two stage wins. I mean, incredible. I think his biggest win until this Giro was one stage in the Tour of Switzerland last year. But the way this guy won those two stages was quite impressive. A real stage hunter. He himself doesn't really understand what's happening to him. But you know, he won that first stage. Obviously, then he didn't have the pressure anymore. He was in that breakaway. Long breakaway. I think we should talk about that stage 14, you know, big breakaway, 30 riders where Ineos decided that they could do a few days without the leader's jersey. And this French rider, Bruno Armiral, got in the leader's jersey. Only one, he's 29 years old, only one win in his professional career. He's the French national time trial champion. No other wins. So think about that, you know, being 3 days in pink for him. That's like, I mean, this is going to make his career
for sure.
But there, Nico Denz winning. And then one rider I think we should definitely talk about. Nobody had ever, I mean, I'm not going to say heard of it, but it didn't come to attention, is the Canadian rider Derek G on Israel Premier Tech. I mean, this rider, he was 3 times second until now. And two of those second places were very, very close to a win. And then on top of that, he had another fourth place on Crans-Montana, which, you know, I mean, to be fourth there, you have to be good. So 25 years old, he has a track background. Basically, until last, he was on the Israel development team last year. And he was doing track races until before last year. So he didn't have a lot of road experience. Was put in a few times last year during the season with the big team. And, you know, they really liked him. And, I mean, this guy is his first Grand Tour, his first full year in the World Tour or in the big races. And, I mean, what a Giro he's doing, you know. I mean, to be able to do this after 2 weeks, I mean, really, really chapeau to this guy. Really a discovery. Big discovery.
Does he keep trying?
I think so.
Yeah, man.
I mean, think he's got to go in breakaways.
Yeah, he's got to go with the break. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was able to go with Pinot and with Cepeda and Rubio on the stage 14. No, on stage 13, sorry. So he finished fourth there. So I saw a lot of climbers getting dropped, and he stayed there. So the guy has potential, you know. From what I hear, you know, also really, really great attitude. Still has a lot to learn, even if he's 25. But you know, he came late to road cycling, and I think we're going to hear this name a lot.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, we're about to find out. We're about to find out a lot of things in the final week.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, this and as we were looking at this and talking about it in the members meeting, what, Johan, really down to four guys, right? So Geraint Thomas, Primoz Roglic, João Almeida, Damiano Caruso, and then, you know, I don't know much about the Norwegian kid, Andreas. I know so much about him. Here's how I would pronounce his last name. Well, you just said it, so that's not fair. Lichtensund.
Yeah, he's a big talent. You know, it's been coming for a long time. He was on Uno X development team, then he went to DSM. Now it's been announced that he's going back to Uno X. They are building a great team for the future. But he's a big talent. He won an impressive stage last year in the Tour of Switzerland. So I don't know if he can stay up there, but he's definitely, I think he's going to try to be top 10, which would be, I mean, he's a big guy, not your typical climber guy. But I think you're right. It's down to, you know, Geraint Thomas, Roglic, Almeida and Caruso.
Well, you got, let's just throw the Norwegian kid in. You got five riders separated, and we'll throw out the French guy, but let's assume he gets, distanced. You've got five of these guys in a minute, within a span of a minute 28 with mm-hmm. this final week to go. I don't know what the weather forecast. We talked a lot about the weather. I certainly hope for their sake it's starting to clear up. You can't imagine that an entire country is going to rain for 3 weeks, but if it's better, you know, that's better for these guys. But a minute 28, five guys with that week, the final uphill time trial, that does look hella hard.
Who's your favorite?
Almeida.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Look, you ate your hat on EF taking Healy. And, I've always, you know, sort of thought Geraint Thomas's best days were behind him. I've been very impressed that he's ridden the Giro that he's ridden thus far. And what a story it would be, by the way, to if he could hold on and win. Maybe I shouldn't pick Roglic. You know, obviously most people are going to pick Roglic. He's had some crashes.
Roglic is doing the opposite of what he has been doing until now.
Well, that's a good thing.
He's been more patient than ever.
He's been very patient. He's not been sprinting. His team has done no work. I mean, except keeping him in position and bringing him, you know, to the right place at the right moment. And I think he's gambling big on the last week. You know, they all went down, you know, Geraint Thomas also went down a few times. I'm really impressed with Thomas also. I think personally, the way I see him riding, although it's not the same competition, but he was, let's not forget, you know, this guy was on the podium of the Tour de France last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he was definitely the third best rider in the Tour de France. And I personally think that this Geraint Thomas in this Giro is better than the Geraint Thomas who was third in the Tour.
All right. So are you telling us that he's your pick? Look, I mean, everything you just said.
I'm picking Roglic.
Okay. But even with what you just said, let's be very clear. That is a Hall of Fame career, mm-hmm. right? And we know how this ebbs and flows, and people have different views of others, you know, their current form and their, you know, what their future holds but he's had a Hall of Fame career. So let's just give him that.
He's multiple world champion medalist. I think he's been Olympic champion on the track, been first, second, and third in the Tour de France. You know, let's not forget. It would obviously be amazing if he finishes in the late days of his career, he can win the Giro. I've heard, I mean, initially before the season, he kind of let understand that it could be his last season. Now I've heard rumors that he may re-sign for two more years with Ineos. I mean, Geraint Thomas is going to be a tough rival, but I think that Roglic still has not shown his full potential in this Giro.
Yeah, that's what I find interesting. Pre-show, it was about two people, Evenepoel and Roglic, and that was it. And no one else was going to touch him. Mm-hmm. And somehow we're throwing in these few other names, three other names who could potentially beat Roglic. And from what I'm hearing with you, like, we have not seen Roglic just come uncork this thing.
Well, I mean, there's been one moment in this Giro where the big guys have attacked. It was Roglic who attacked. It was only Theo Gegenhardt who could bridge up to him. And then Geraint Thomas came a little bit later. Almeida, Evenepoel, and nobody else could follow. So that was, if that's an indication of where, I mean, of course, now we're 10 days later and things change, obviously. But I think Roglic is really riding. For the moment, I think he's been riding really smart.
How tough is tomorrow, Johan?
It's hard, you know.
What did you tell me the total vert was?
5,300 meters.
All right, that's a lot. Okay, let's just establish that. We know that. We talk a lot about just how hard it is for really anybody, but more so for some guys to come back after. I mean, rest days are always weird. Right here, you have a rest day. You love kind of a break-in stage. Let's get in there and open up the legs a little bit. Boy, I would hate to have a rest day. I mean, hate.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden have a day. And for those who think in feet, this is a day of 16,000 feet plus of vertical climbing after a rest day. I mean, shoot me in the face. no way.
No, Monte Bondone, the last climb is hard. It's about 20 kilometers of climbing. But there's a steep part of up in the part of 8 kilometers, 8, 9, 10%. So there's plenty of terrain for tomorrow. It's going to be a GC battle, I think. No doubt about that. Whether it's for the stage victory or not, we're going to see attacks. And then, you know, let's not forget, we have two more mountain stages after that. The hardest one is stage 19 on Tre Cimi di Lavaredo, famously known for the climb where Eddie Merckx won his first Giro d'Italia in 1968.
Remembers nobody. But
well, I remember because my dad was always talking to me about that stage when I was little. So that's why I remember. But 5,500 meters of climbing that day.
Thanks. That's almost 17,000 feet.
Yeah. And so that's stage 19. And then the day after this brutal time trial. This is not a time trial. It's a mountain stage, that time trial. It's 19 kilometers, of which the last 9.5 kilometers are just incredibly steep. So I mean, plenty of terrain to see a real big show, and the best rider will definitely win this Giro.
Yeah, good. Well, speaking of cyclical, here you have. I was just looking down the GC here. Of course, Damiano Caruso, who we just talked about, sitting in sixth. For all intents and purposes, he's kind of sitting in fifth. One of the guys that, you know, might play a factor. But back to the cyclical thing. We've only got two Italians in the top 19 on GC, right? That's I mean, this is, Johan, you know how that, what the Tour of Italy means to Italian teams, to Italian riders, to Italian culture. I mean, I don't remember a Giro. Well, I mean, this is not their wave, right? You've got somebody else is surfing the wave, but you'd be hard pressed to find many Giros with it going into the final week with two Italians in the top 20. That's very, very rare.
Yeah. Well, for starters, Lance, there's no Italian teams in the World Tour. That's something that is, I mean, crazy if you think about it. You know, with that culture, with so many races, you could say, okay, maybe UAE, you could consider that a half Italian team, maybe Bahrain also a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, one guy in the top 20, basically, right? So because who's the other guy? Simone Velasco. Yeah. So, wow. I hadn't looked at that stat, but that's crazy.
Isn't that something? I mean, that is the first. Could we just recognize that that's the first time that I have ever busted out a stat that Johan didn't think about? JV, that's like you getting a stat up on Johan. I mean, this just doesn't happen. This is, you know, fuck it. I'm done for the day. I had a bunch of stuff planned. I'm just going to cancel it. You know,
Mic drop.
Yeah, no, I'm good, man. I'm good. Cam, cancel the rest of my day. I'm done. I'm out, man. I'm going to go fucking play golf and drink cocktails. I don't know. All right. Well, it's going to be exciting. I guess we'll wrap it all up when next.
We'll do a midweek check-in, and
okay.
Then
I might let you guys do that.
We'll be back. Yeah, we'll cover that, and then we'll be back for a full Giro recap.
Next Sunday, I guess.
And if you don't mind, real quick, I do want to draw some attention here to what we're doing, helping with in Teleco Plains, Tennessee. We're doing a Bikes for Kids there, similar to what we did in Uvalde, but on a smaller scale. I think it's about 250 bikes. And after I left Chattanooga, I went up to Teleco Plains with Operation Get Out just to visit with the people there. Steve is the guy who's one of our listeners who rode in and liked what we did in Uvalde. We pulled in and they were building bikes. They were just outside the visitor center, and it's an interesting place, Teleco Plains. It's beautiful. And it's like a day destination. You know, people park their cars at the visitor center and get on their bikes and go ride. A lot of motos. So, you know, it's just that kind of terrain. Absolutely beautiful, but it was dependent on a couple industries that no longer exist there. It was lumber and ironworks. And so there's no one spends the night. There's no hotel, you know, it doesn't have the hotels and the restaurants, but an absolutely beautiful place. And the kids are, you know, struggling with poverty, obesity. And so Steve asked us and Operation Get Out to get involved. If you can donate, $250 buys a bike and a lock for one of those kids. They've been doing it by fixing up used bikes for some time. So this is a next level thing for these kids of this community. So if you can donate, go to wedo.team. You'll see a Teleco Plains Bikes for Kids icon on the menu bar.
Yeah, get them out there. It's the time of year. Keep them going in the summer too. We're approaching, let's not forget, you know, school's almost out. But these kids, you know, summertime is the time to get out and rip around and get away from mom and dad, fall off your new bike, scrape your knee. Get back up. Keep going. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. Sounds like a lot to be had here in the last week. So it just depends who wants it the most. We'll see you all in a week.